Hi there, it's time for another edition of The Journey of Hope. I'm your host, Rodney Mathers. The Journey of Hope is a podcast for ex-offenders, our families, and our friends. It's a great show this week. My guest is Johnny Dent, and Johnny's story is inspiring because it's tangible evidence of the role that faith plays in the rebuilding of our lives. Johnny Dent on this edition of The Journey of Hope. Just want to let you know what's coming up in the next couple of weeks right here on The Journey of Hope. Next week, we have Richard Norris, and we'll be talking about his book, Hoof It, Seven Key Lessons to Sustainable Success. And the following week, we have Mo Stiegel. Some of you have probably heard of Mo. He's written a book called Against All Odds. That's what's coming up in the next couple of weeks right here on The Journey of Hope. Hi there, and welcome back. On the phone with me is my special guest, Mr. Johnny Dent. Mr. Dent has written a book called Any Everything Man, and he's also written a book called Sugar Boy, where he explains contemporary life and explains how anyone can transform their life. Welcome, Johnny, to The Journey of Hope.
Thank you, Rodney, for having me. Kudos to you and this wonderful program that you've put together for formerly incarcerated individuals.
Well, thank you, sir. Hey, I was looking through your stuff on the internet there, and I noticed that your explanation of what happened in the 60s and 70s and how that impacted the children of the 70s is quite interesting. Tell me your theory on that. I like that.
Well, I think what happened was essentially is that when society pushed to become more progressive, the parents and the grandparents began to basically become more active into the communities. To kind of quiet or quench that civil unrest, society had to correct some things that was going on in society to create a better system of checks and balances. That's what American society is about. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was some of those grandparents and even some of those parents began to go into government jobs and various other activities. And so the children of the 60s and the 70s essentially were left at home to basically raise themselves through an older peer, through a babysitter, or through an older sibling. Mm-hmm. And so when you have children raising children, even though we mean well, if the foundational things aren't there as far as your upbringing and the structural things that you need as far as being able to properly discipline and interact with children, you can create you can open a parent Pandora's box with that situation.
Well, it's a very interesting theory, and I think a lot of us that grew up during that time period were babysat by the television, and that's where we got our values from. We're probably the first generation that was babysat by the television.
Absolutely.
But I'm assuming that you're a child of the 70s yourself.
Actually, 1970 to be exact.
Okay, and I read where your father was an atheist. He was.
My father was a professed atheist. I don't necessarily believe there's a such thing as a pure atheist.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is I do believe that at some point, based on the ailment, based on the suffering, no matter what you go through, at one time in your life, you will scream out, oh, God, depending on the ailment that comes out of you. Now, whether you take him figuratively or metaphorically, we recognize that there is a power greater than ourselves. So my father was basically a professed atheist. One of the few people or many people who get disgruntled with church and just basically say it's a bunch of malarkey. Mm-hmm. And he not only was he a professed atheist, he was also a very authoritarian figure, and he was a lieutenant police detective.
Right, that's what I read, and so I'm noticing that what he portrayed to you was that the way that a man was a man, it had to do with how tough you are. And I think a lot of people that listen to this program kind of fall in to that trap or have it at one point in their life. But you saw that there was something flawed in that reasoning. And what I'm curious about is, what was it that was missing, and how did you discover that?
Rodney, I'm glad that's a very good question. I'll see if I can answer, because it sounded like it was a couple parts to that. But one thing I do remember is that growing up in society, there were certain ways that you walked and you talked. There was a clear line, a distinction between gender. And a lot of the men coming out of those different mindsets, the old school thinking, they basically looked at the way you walked or the way you interacted with other youth, and they labeled you either sissy or homosexual, and they instantly corrected it, whether it was through a physical correction or it was a harsh verbal tongue lashing.
Right.
There were just certain things, as well as you know, that you just didn't do when you were growing up. So my father comes from that old generation where basically if a man was a man through all kinds of stuff, whether you had a bunch of females, whether you had this athletic prowess and you was physically built, you had to find a way. It was sort of the old John Wayne the Duke type of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, you had to wear a 10-gallon hat and have a gun at your hip or you were less than a man. What I've been doing, I've been going all across the country, and I've been telling men that we have embraced the myth of manhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that, unfortunately, because America is so diverse and we don't have significant points in our history, in our upbringing, in our heritage, where we can say there is a rite of passage that basically makes you a man, then basically you have to create, and enhance the title of your program, that journey yourself. You
mm-hmm.
have to define when you become a man, because no one else will do it for you.
Mm-hmm. I think, and the reason I bring it up, Johnny, is that those of us that have been incarcerated, particularly those of us that spent, you know, a considerable amount of time in prison, you do have to have, in order to survive in there, this kind of an edge to you. But when you come home, it's time to get rid of that. And I think a lot of us, when we come home, we have a hard time putting that part of our personality and our aggressiveness, shall we say, behind us. And so I bring it up with you to see what kinds of advice you could give us in order to put that behind us and to help us understand that, you know, this physical toughness is not necessarily what defines us as a man. Our, you know, jumping out with a poor temper doesn't define us as a man. And so that's why I bring it up with you. So what advice would you have for men that are trying to put this behind them?
Great, great question. When you talk about the edge, you're absolutely right. During periods of incarceration, I mean, you would be foolish to be as transparent in prison as you would in regular or the general population.
Right.
You do need the edge, because the edge does define a clear boundary of where guys can cross and when certain things stop.
That's right.
You're absolutely right about that, Rodney. But on another note, you did bring up an interesting point about how when we come out of incarceration, we still tend to wear that edge and we don't need it anymore.
Right.
I have a saying that I created many years ago, and it's simply this. In order to break the cycle, you have to grow your circle.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us go back into the same communities, the same environments, and we see the same behaviors. In physical psychology, they basically tell you that the group has this powerful influence on you, and at some point, you will acclimate and get involved with certain things that groups get involved with.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, there's something that's called the bystander effect. And in the bystander effect, you wonder why you look at certain horrific incidences in the news and you'll see these certain things, and you'll say, why didn't anybody get involved? While there was something like 200-300 people just standing by watching. The bystander effect basically says that people, the greater the group, the less a person is more likely to get involved. But the reverse works the same way. If there's a group and they're getting into some activities, certainly for whatever reason, innately, we believe that the activities of the group is something that the group will basically, that's basically good and necessary for the survival of the being. So we tend to join and gravitate towards those things. But let me just clear this up and just go basically what you said on the question.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let's assume we're talking about an individual that's out. If we're talking about men, gender specific, and we're talking about men, first of all, men have to learn to interact with people. We are the last people on the face of the earth who are social beings. And that's one thing that the incarceration experience teaches us, to become isolated or pair up with no more than one or two people. Why? Because you can't trust people. But there are some people out here who really want to help us, but it is our disposition that basically keeps us cemented in our position. Mm-hmm. You have to become an interactive being and be able to engage people. You don't look at every person on the street or every person in some type of social service building or something like that as the enemy. We got to get out of this mentality like it's me against the world. And we have to re-embrace and recommit to the idea in America that there is an American dream.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what people feel about this country, this is the only country in the world where you can fall so many times and just basically resurrect yourself by changing who you are, changing your philosophy, changing, you can grab a hold of another skill set. I mean, you always have a time where you can basically reinvent yourself in this country.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
The other thing, as far as being you have to be a social being, and you have to be able to be the type of person that's going to reinvent something. The third thing you have to do is be a person that believes in something. Now, I know that sounds kind of generic and kind of just all spatial, but I can tell you there's so many people that I basically disconnected myself from because they don't believe anything. People who don't believe anything fall for anything.
Would you suggest that we look for qualities that, you know, that are pro-social in our lives and eliminate people from our lives that do not have those qualities? Or are you suggesting that we do that in terms of our friendships? And
well, you know, the old adage is, especially if you hang with nine broke friends, you're bound to be the tenth one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I talk about the philosophy of growing your circle to break the cycle, your circle has to start somewhere. I'm not asking you to eliminate those people or suggesting that, but at some point, the circle itself will have them push themselves out if they no longer fit the paradigm or the model of the things that you're trying to do in society. Another thing we do as ex-felons in this country is we tend to allow downtime to be downtime.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is if we're looking for a job, we just sit on our keister and we wait on the phone to ring, or we engage in a little activity on the internet, whatever we do. You have to stop doing it. And that's not just for the ex-felon, that's anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Your downtime is time for you to invest in you. So what I did personally, I stayed in the library. I constantly read everything I could. I volunteered in places where they said you couldn't even get a job as an ex-felon. I still was there and I was listening. I wanted to stay active. I needed people to see my face. Because ex-felon or not, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Absolutely.
But in the process of getting to know your who, you need to have your what. You need to have something. You know
right.
what I mean?
Absolutely. I noticed in your book that you write about topics like domestic violence, single parenting, teen pregnancy, youth violence, drug trafficking. And I'm just curious, Johnny, do you have an opinion why these things are so prevalent in our society?
I believe that when you don't, I'm the type of person that will nip things in the bud early.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't do that, things just tend to sprout and get out of control. But I could say this, when that male figurehead, when things change with the male figurehead, there's so many social ills that are allowed to just become prevalent in our society. Uh-huh. When you don't have that person, and now it's starting even shit where you just can't solely depend on the man, but when you don't have that male figurehead in place, basically everything looks and says, okay, this is a good place to do some things. Case in point, here in Cleveland, we have a guy who's committed or allegedly committed something like 13 murders of women. And they asked me on the radio, well, how can something like this happen? I said, it's easy. When we don't have people being responsible, when you have an area where everything is cluttered and it's chaotic, anything can just seep in. Kind of like the thing when my mother used to tell me, you know, the house has to be clean. Well, why? We don't want bugs and pests coming on in the house. You make things uncomfortable for certain type of lifestyles and situations when you are completely organized and structured. You make things uncomfortable. But definitely, society has gotten to a point where we are compromising with values and versus setting standards. That's just the bottom line. And if we continue to do that, basically you have a society that has now began to eat off itself. It's become parasitic. It's no longer this thing, I want to work hard, I want to get to where I'm going, and then I appreciate where I am. While you're doing that, there's another type of entity that's sitting on the sidelines saying, hey, I don't need to work as hard, and I don't need to have that work ethic. All I have to do is wait till you line your stuff up, and I'll come in an instant, and I'll just ride off of you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from some of the imagery that we see in our videos and our social media and some of the things that we're embracing. So there is a breakdown of necessary values of substance in this country.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, what role you felt like the entertainment industry played in that. And I have often said on the show that, you know, when we come out of prison, we need to be careful what we, you know, cherish and idolize, and things in the entertainment industry are one of those things that I suggest. And I'm curious what you think about that. Say certain music stars and so forth, are they not good for us?
We're experiencing a time period when we're basically anything that you follow, anything that you study, you enter into agreement with, even through the ear gate. As a Christian man, I understand that the scripture says faith come by hearing. If you're dealing with music or you're dealing with any art form, whether it be dance, whether it be written, you are dealing with what's called a muse. And a muse is basically a spirit, and it's a spirit that you enter into agreement with to create something. Now, I know that sounds far-fetched, so let me just bring it home where it makes sense. You are what you eat. That is just not in food. That's in what you put in your mental faculties. That's what you put inside your ear gate. In that, you are what you eat. There is no way that you can constantly take something in and at some point it doesn't come out in some form. For us, if I was to take a piece of bread and I was to eat that bread, the body will use what it needs, and then at some point we have a way to get rid of that stuff, and it goes through our waste, whether it be through urination or through defecation, it leaves the body. Mm-hmm. And whatever is good for the body, or essentially, it'll hold on and it'll do what it's supposed to do. The same thing happens with these different books and stuff and these different social medias and all this stuff that we basically entertain ourselves with. Those things become attached to us, and before we know it, we're acting out on things. A big example is with the pornography industry. Mm-hmm. Pornography, people say, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with it. But it has been a proven fact that when men begin to constantly over and over look at pornographic images, 75% of those individuals want to go out and commit those acts, whether they be through consent or non-consensual function. I mean, these are the things we know just based on studying. You can always say, well, I'm the exception to the rule. I'm not the person who's going to engage in this stuff. But, Rodney, the exception to the rule does nothing to negate the rule. It actually does more to support the rule.
Absolutely interesting. And I've had emails before from men who have come home from prison and have gotten stuck on that one-way street of pornography on the internet. And it definitely is a one-way street. And I just want to tell people out there, if you find yourself going down that road, you need to turn around, brother, because it is bad news. It is bad news. And
in a sense, too, it's the mindset. One thing I've shared with potential employers, and I also presented when I presented to gentlemen such as us who've been incarcerated, is that when they tell you, well, you're ex-felon, I can't hire you, then you have to counter with another negative, create a double negative. So, yes, I'm an ex-felon, and I'm also an ex-failure. That's exactly what that word means. I am a formerly incarcerated individual. When I had my experience being incarcerated, it wasn't the things that society had glamorized, that Hollywood had glamorized. You know, you go in and you saw people doing crazy acts to one another and stuff like that. All that is just a part of it. The thing that got me the most, Rodney, was I was in a place where I seen so many men who were failures, and they were okay with it.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And that's the thing that got me. I said, wait a minute. Do you understand that we're in prison? This is the lowest of the low. This is it. This is the bottom of it. And yet I see you're happy. You're playing chess. You're engaging. Everything is a joke. You're laughing. I said, man, I'm competitive, Rodney. I hate to lose. Okay, so for me, that was the ultimate. I said, I have lost, and now everyone in society knows it.
Johnny, so, I totally agree with what you're saying, and I felt that in there every day when I would see people that didn't seem to be bothered by being there. It just tore me up. I'll tell you, I did 7 years and 11 months, and not one of them was I happy.
Right.
So, yeah, I can definitely relate to what you're saying there, and I've never heard anybody else express it, but man, you're right on target with that. Hey, listen, you're associated with a group called International Men of Excellence. Tell me about that.
The International Men of Excellence is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that assists men into becoming better men and assists young males with the journey into becoming men. So what we do, we target purposely at-risk youth. The higher the risk, the more we engage them, because it's the only way we can basically, it's one of the ways we can measure change. And we have four programs. Now we started out with three. The Bible program is a reading program in which we use autobiographical literature, people who've been through struggle, people that have been through some things. And we have the youth groups. We sit down and we let them read that literature, and we engage them with a series of questions, life-changing questions. The Cultivating the Weeds program is a program developed by Mr. Morgan, who's the CEO of the organization. And what we do in this program is he was a principal at one time at one of the local high schools here, and he started seeing young men come into the office, and he asked them, he said, hey, why are you here? And where's your father? And so they would always say their fathers were incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So he had them sit down and begin to write letters to their fathers while they're incarcerated. And through those letters, he found that a lot of youth started getting in trouble on purpose just to come in so they can begin to have that dialogue with their father. Look how powerful that is.
Wow.
Also, there's another program called the Journeyman Program, which is a rites of passage program where we take them through a bit of hard skills and soft skills, and then we do some hard life skills. We throw some hard life skills training at them to assimilate what they're going to expect in culture, and we create a rites of passage program for them. Now, the GEM Society is the newest program that we have, and this is one in which we teach men just social etiquette. Believe it or not, you know, you look at the Tarzan and Jane theory. Tarzan, in a sense, was a good man, but he was lord of the jungle. You take him out of the jungle and you put him into a civilized environment, and they looked at him like he was a savage. But had he been trained in social etiquette, he would have made a great assimilation into the population. And it's the same thing that happens to us as men. I'm still learning myself some certain things that I never knew that I had to do to be what was called socially graceful, as far as my speech and the way I stand and the way I walk and a certain way you eat the fork. What does a little bitty fork on the plate mean? All that's important because whether we know it or not, that's another form of communication. People look at you and they see that and they say, he's not ready to come where I want to take him or where I am. Mm-hmm. So that's important. If you feel that you've basically put this incarceration thing behind you and you left it alone, then you have to get a new way of communicating. If I know that I want to engage with Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or George Bush or whoever, anybody who's up in that upper echelon area of society and they're doing something in society, these guys come out of West Point and out of certain colleges, Yale and places like this, where they have been taught social graces. It's simple stuff. And so when I sit down with them, certainly, they look at me and they say, okay, well, he's still eating everything with a spork. Not a spoon, not a fork, but a spork, and he pulls it out of his pocket. That's a level of communication that basically tells them in small things, you're not ready to come where I am.
There's only some of us that are going to get that joke, right?
Right.
Only those of us that had been there. By the way, I was just watching Obama do a press conference on C-SPAN, and no matter what your politics are, you got to admit, man, the cat's slick, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's smooth. He's real smooth.
He's smart, smart guy. Hey, listen, how do people get in touch with you and get a hold of your book?
Get in touch with me through my website. To get my book, you can go through jdentjr.com. That's J, D as in David, E-N-T, JR.com. To get my book, you can order it directly through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. That book is everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. It's even international. You get it in London. You get it in the Ukraine if you want to. And also, to get directly in contact with me, area code 216-319, and my last name, Dent. That's area code 216-319, D as in David, E-N-T.
The books are called The Any Everything Man and Sugar Boy. Thank you, Mr. Dent. Thank you so much for being right here on the Journey of Hope with us. We appreciate it.
No problem, Rodney. And again, kudos to everything that you guys are doing.
We appreciate it. Hey, my name is Rodney Mathers. We'll be right back after this on the Journey of Hope. Rose and I love hearing from you guys. You can drop me a line at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney at yahoo.com. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting? Here we are again at the end of another show. What a great show it was. I want to thank my special guest, Mr. Johnny Dent, and remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? See you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.